are listening to Conversations with Nathan Latka, where I sit down and interview the top SaaS founders, like Eric Yuan from Zoom. If you'd like to subscribe, go to getlatka.com. We've published thousands of these interviews, and if you want to sort through them quickly by revenue or churn, CAC, valuation, or other metrics, the easiest way to do that is to go to getlatka.com and use our filtering tool. It's like a big Excel sheet for all of these podcast interviews. Check it out right now at getlatka.com. FunKite was launched back in 2015 on a dream and an idea. They've scaled nicely today in a capital efficient way. They put out, or they generated, they get 5,000 applications per month. They sent out offers, about 1,300 of those. Some portion of those are accepted and approved. The business in 2023 did quote about $70 million of revenue. Alex is constantly thinking about how do they keep their both default rate low, which is 16% if I'm remembering properly, and then the actual charge off loss rate, 6.8% of that. Those are good economics. They optimize for about a 16% take rate NIM sort of all in, which is very healthy. 91 folks full-time on the team. They're funding these deals with prom notes on their own balance sheet and then also sourcing some of them out to capital partners as well. Hey folks, my guest is Alex Schwartz. He's the CEO of FunKite, one of the fastest growing fintech companies in New York that provides funding to small businesses across the US. The company was founded in 2015 and his company utilizes a boutique funding style, offering business owners a flexible variety of products and services that can be tailored to fit their individual needs. Before FunKite, he engineered and sold proprietary technology to the greater fintech industry. Alex, you ready to take us to the top?
Let's do it.
All right. Give me your, just to get us all in the right frame, right off the bat, give us your sweet spot deal. Is it $100,000 into a small business doing $1 million a year in revenue?
So our average deal size is about $110,000. Mm-hmm. And these are companies that are doing between $1 and $5 million a year in annual gross sales.
Okay. And any specific sector, e-com, restaurants?
No, very broad. Everything from restaurants to e-com to medical. There's some industries that we don't cater to at the moment.
Like what?
Like transportation and trucking. They're really in trouble. Those guys are really having a big hard time right now getting by. We don't do bail bondsmen. So truckers, transportation, and we've pulled back a little bit on the construction industry.
And why is that? I mean, there's a lot of fintech firms that are doing on balance sheet lending to truck drivers or truck companies that buy the truck, and then you can sort of discount cash flow, the trucking revenues, and they lend against that. Why are you staying away from that?
Let's understand our product first. I think that will break it down. So what we do is called revenue-based finance. We're buying future receivables based on historical sales, and we're buying them at a discount. So as the merchant is generating sales, we collect our receivables, and we collect those receivables, a portion of those receivables to recover to accumulate what we've purchased, right? So let's say we bought $100,000 worth of receivables for a lump sum payment of $90,000 today. And we'll collect 10% or whatever that fixed ratio is of your receivables. So if you did 5,000 in sales this month, we'll collect $500. If you did 3,000, we'll collect 300. So it varies. So we take.
And the what's the typical term though? Is that you're going to get back to 100?
There is no term until we collect all of our receivables. There is no term.
But Alex, for you, what's typical though, right? So if you're taking 10% a month, your receivables, do you typically get paid back on the receivables you purchased within 5 months, or do you model for 12 months or 15?
I mean, we model anywhere from 8 to 16 months, but it's very, very unpredictable, right? So there is no term. There is no fixed term with our product. We're taking a ride with the merchant that, you know, look, we look at historical data and we hope that business is going to increase and sales are going to go up, but it's really hard to predict that. So having said that, why trucking is it, so we've seen a lot of transportation companies fail. The biggest problem they have is accounting for the cost of goods, which in their case might be fuel, right? So fuel is jumping up and down. They're booking the jobs at one rate. They're not getting paid fast enough, so they're having a hard time, and this has been going on for years. We see a lot of major transportation companies file bankruptcy in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But construction, so we're seeing a delay in payments. They're having a hard time collecting money. a lot of projects went into standstill. So when interest rates went up, a lot of the commercial properties are in trouble. We see a lot of big developers in trouble right now. They can't refinance. So that's slowed down. The residential market still seems to be doing good, but not as good as it was, you know, immediately post COVID, right?
And Alex, so in factoring a key component you have to model is obviously the discount rate. The 100K example you just gave us where you wired 90K up front would represent a 10% discount of future receivables. Is that your target typically?
Typically, it can range from anywhere from 10 to about 28% discount. So depending on the risk factors that we're facing.
And the quickest way, at least on a year-long facility, now yours again go from 8 to 16 months depending on the percent of monthly receivables, but a 28% discount rate paid back over 12 months represents about a 52% effective interest rate. How do you get consumers, or how do you get these businesses comfortable with that kind of interest rate?
You can't really consider an effective interest rate on this because this is not a loan. And it's impossible.
Well, but Alex, sorry, just to take a step back. It's not a loan. It's a true sale. They're selling you future receivables, which is why you don't have to deal with recharacterization risk and usury and lending laws, right? That's the way you get around that as a factoring business. You can still though calculate.
We don't get around it. This is what the product is, right?
Yeah, but the reason factoring is a thing is because it's a true sale. You don't have to worry about usury laws in certain states and lending licenses and things of that nature.
Yes, but the difference between a factoring product and this product, and if you give me 30 seconds, factoring works like this. I've got a purchase order from Home Depot. I've got a real buyer that's ready to buy $1 million worth of widgets. I'm a manufacturer. I need $500,000 to produce those widgets. I go to a factor. I say, here's a purchase order from Home Depot for $1 million. Give me $500,000. When I deliver those goods, Home Depot is writing the check to the factor and I get the difference. And so in factoring, you're underwriting the buyer, right? Who's buying the product? How credit worthy are they? So that's a little, and there's usually, they're very short-term type of deals, right? With us, we're buying receivables. We don't know if they're going to have. So we're looking at, let's say, a restaurant. We look at 12 months of receivables. They're averaging $100,000 a month in sales. And that's how we're going to calculate our offer. But what happens if their sales go down? It's a hurricane. It's COVID. There is no guarantee that they're going to have receivables. So because we reconcile their sales constantly, right? So we do reconciliation. So if we're supposed to take 10%, we're looking at their sales or we're adjusting payments. It most of the time, it never works out as planned. It's always a slower pace, okay? So there is no fixed term here, and it's very hard. Look, we have disclosures in states like California and states like New York, where at the time of origination, we have to provide a APR, right? And we do calculate this APR based on the standards that they have provided, but it's not always accurate. And it will change. It will change because what if it takes them 2 years or 3 years, right? So the better way to look at this is the cost of capital. So, you know, I'm getting $90,000. I got to pay back $100,000. My cost of capital is $10,000. That's the true way to look at this. And because there is no term, and that's really, really important, right?
So, no, Alex, my audience will understand this. They're sort of savvy. They'll understand this completely. But I just want to underscore: paying back that 10K cost of capital in 3 months, if the company grows really fast and receivables grows really fast,
it's
right,
going to be a lot more.
It's very different than paying back 10K over someone that delays their payments and it takes 3 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're not catering to your bankable client, right? We're not banking.
Yeah, I get that. It's a restaurant. I guess my question to you, though, is the example we just gave is if you do a deal with a restaurant for 110K, your average deal size, and then they explode, right? They do really well. That's good for you. That's great. You're going to get your money back quicker. But it drives the effective. Like if they're backing into an effective rate, it drives it through the roof. Why do you ever restructure those to keep your good customers coming back for more?
No, we don't restructure them. And I've never seen it explode in a way where they just pay back like that. However, you know, if a merchant comes back in 30 days and says, look, I just want to repay the receivables now, we just give them a discount on the balance.
So instead of like the 10K, you might say you're paying back early, you can pay a 6K.
Yeah, we discount it, and that's great, right?
I see.
Explodes, but it never explodes in the way we want it to explode.
It's always the worst case.
It's the implosion, not the explosion, right?
So, yeah. Help me understand on a month. Let's just use last month, February. How many new deals did you do across how many companies?
Okay, so we processed last month probably approximately 5,000 applications for different businesses, right?
Okay.
We don't disclose the numbers of deals we actually fund or the volume. We can give you just average numbers, right? But so yeah, 5,000 businesses, about 5,000 applications we processed, a variety of industries. Like there's, we get sometimes agriculture, supermarkets, restaurants, manufacturers. It's just to, you name it, we see it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, can you give me? I don't want to push you on something you don't want to disclose. But can you at least sort of put us in the right range, right? So, if you have 5,000 applicants, are you doing sort of on the range of 1,000 new wires per month into these companies, or can you give me any kind of range?
Nobody does that type of conversion. No, that's
so it's much lower.
Yeah, it's much lower. It could be anywhere from. So I'll give you this number. Out of 5,000 applicants, we made offers to merchants. About 27% of those applicants we made funding offers to.
Okay. Got it. So about 1,300 you made offers to, and then some portion of the, why would someone not accept your offer?
They might get a better deal from a competitor, better terms.
Like who?
There's OnDeck, there's Shopify, there's PayPal, there's a lot of big competitors in the space, right? Mm-hmm.
You compete with Lending Club?
So Lending Club is really not a funder. It's a lot of them are like kind of lead gen. So they're gathering, they're telling you they're doing it, and then they send it out. But Lending Club is not really a business funding. They do it more personal stuff, consumer based, right?
I see. And just to be clear, you're not lead gen, right? You have your own source of capital.
No, we're absolutely a full fintech in the space. Our own underwriting, legal, collections, sales, we do. Marketing.
So you've raised balance sheet capital to do these deals hold them.
Yes, we have. Yes.
Okay. So what's your fund size? How much do you have available to lend out?
On any given time, our capacity is about $30 million a month.
Okay. This is an interesting question. Like who's backing these fintech providers today? I mean, you're reading in the news about folks backing up from the BaaS providers. Like you're seeing Treasury Prime lose their banking partnerships and the government coming out on BaaS. I mean, are you seeing a lot of sources of capital for you to raise to then lend out, or not lend out, but wire?
More and more fund. The word is fund. More and more every single day. So there's a big influx of capital from hedge funds, mm-hmm. High net worth individuals. There's a lot of syndication that goes on in this space. So the capital, and we've had a lot of conversations with banks that want to jump into the space. There's going to be some regulation coming out next year where banks are going to be forced to go back and start to lend out to the small businesses. But banks are not equipped to underwrite a small business. They can't underwrite a pizzeria. They don't understand how to look at bank statements like we do. So we're in our final stages of automation that. So let's go back a step. How does this really work, right? So no two businesses are alike. You take a Burger King in New York City and you take a Burger King in Toledo. It looks like it's a Burger King, two different operators, different costs, labor, rent, everything, right? So, and you've got two different people that run businesses and cash flow two different ways. So you really have to go through those bank statements to really understand true sales, revenue, and how they operate their business, right? You have to look at line by line to see what's going on, right? So what we've done is we've created automation that's able to really understand, read those bank statements, and with scoring models, shoot out offers. So primary for us is looking at the cash flow history of the business. Second is credit and background and industry. And we've been able to do that. And banks, they can't do that. I mean, we talk to banks all the time. They don't understand that. They're credit-driven products. They pull the credit, it's 750. Great, we can fund this guy. We can provide credit. We don't look at credit. Credit's not the most important factor to us. It's how they got there. So you can have somebody with 550 credit. They're just utilizing a lot of their credit and their credit score is down. You can have somebody with 780 FICO score and they have no credit. They've got one credit card. And so credit isn't always a true, reliable factor for us when it comes to providing funding.
Mm-hmm. When your source of capital in the $30 million fund that you've raised,
More than that. I'm just saying I have capacity to fund $30 million a month.
So what? How much capital have you raised total in debt funds that you can then again go?
Both in debt and so both in debt and participation, almost $200 million.
Okay, and how much do you have to participate on the? So the advance rate is what, 90%, 95%, 80%?
The average. What do you mean advance rate?
Yes, you mentioned fintechs raise equity to cover their haircut capital in their warehouse facilities typically, and those warehouse facilities.
We don't have any warehouse facilities or senior lines. We don't take on capital like that, right? We have investment partners that participate in these transactions or these contracts, and that's how we structure it. So we have.
Balance but you're creating sheet. You're creating an individual SPV for every deal.
We have SPVs, but it's structured as participations. Yes, some of them. Some of it is participation, and some of it is balance sheet that we raise on a debt basis, but not senior lines or mezzanines.
Okay, let me just use a real example from our research. Right, you raised $16.8 million, according to Crunchbase, in October of 2023. It's debt financing fund kite $16.8 million. What is that?
That's structured notes.
Oh, I see. So got it. So you're raising these sort of structured notes at your opco level, and then that's the money you're using to do these deals.
For sure.
Oh, I see. I see. Why'd you choose to go that?
We did another filing recently. That number went up to like 22.8 or something.
Okay. So where do we get the 200 million from? Like, I can't find that 200 million number in my research anywhere. Because I see something like.
We have a lot of participants that take down participation in deals.
Oh, I see. Okay. So that's the total. That's like what you've also sourced out to your partners. That's not necessarily the paper you're holding. Yeah. Okay. Yes. You're holding something like 20 million.
No, we're holding way more than 20 million.
Okay.
Because we fund, we collect, we put more money out, right? So it's kind of compounding out.
Okay. And then the prom notes that you just mentioned, the prom notes you raised at your operating co, you raise those at a fixed or floating rate?
We raise them with a stated interest and a contingent interest. So we give the upside on how well the portfolio does.
Oh, interesting. So it's like a hurdle rate almost, and then an 80-20 split above the hurdle.
No 80-20 split. We charge our fees regardless of the performance, right? But we do provide stated interest, fixed interest, let's say, and then the upside on how the portfolio or that node closes out over a period of time.
We've recently seen others in this space, like Pipe, for example, just give money out willy-nilly. Those founders are now no longer there. The book effectively, according to press outlets, blew up, and the company has pivoted to selling embedded finance tools to sort of a DevOps play. Charge-offs are very, very important in this space and managing them. What would you consider a good loss rate, and are you comfortable sharing sort of what you're under today?
Yeah, so traditionally, we've written off about 6.8%. That was through 12/31/23. In bad write-offs. What we see is...
That's on a monthly vintage or your total life to date?
Total life average of write-off of about 6.8% of the receivables we purchase.
So just to be clear, if that point in time, total life to date, you'd put out $100 million of capital, your losses would have been 6.8.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Do you recover any of those or are they just gone forever?
No, that's what we've written off, right? So we recover at least 50% of what goes into defaults or collections. And here's an interesting
And that's part. That 6.8 number, right?
The 6.8 is 100% right of uncollectible.
Okay, so you've already tried to put it in and you can't get it out. Okay.
Can't get it out, right? Yeah. Here's some interesting stats. 9 out of 10 of those deals that go into defaults are not because the merchant is running into issues. They're going in because they get the debt settlement companies call them and say, basically, stop paying. We're going to negotiate for less, right? That's the problem. Because the merchants that really have a problem call us. We just lower the payments based on their sales. We work with them. Mm-hmm. So the defaults that we, and of course, from time to time, we're wrong and the merchant goes out of business. And there's not that, that's the risk we take, right?
Yep.
But most of the defaults we see are, again, just people wake up one morning and decide they don't want to pay you because they either don't or someone convinced them they shouldn't.
And what's that percent? It's obviously bigger than 6.8. What percent going to default?
So total, total we I think trailing, it's about 12 to maybe 15% of the portfolio going to some type of a collection issue.
Yep.
And then, you know, we work it out, or we have to sue and then we get them back on track. But the write-off is actually, we're trailing about 6.8%.
How do you sue and make it worth it? I mean, if these deals are only 30 grand, don't you lose more money on the suit?
Depending if you have expensive lawyers, but you know, if we've kind of worked out a policy and procedure on how we do this to make it cost effective.
Mm-hmm. And so as you think about building a business with a good margin of safety moving forward, and you're thinking, okay, of every dollar we put out, 15% will end up defaulted, 6.8 will be actually charged off. In other words, we sued, we can't get the money, collections couldn't get it, the company went out of business. You know, you didn't have
if
to
it goes
money
out of business, we don't even sue.
Yeah. Okay. Obviously. Yeah. Yeah. My point being though, is let's say in the next year you put out $100 million in your head, you're thinking you got to charge or make at least something like 30%, subtract the 15% defaults, the 6.8%. And then that's your margin. That's what you take home as a business.
You could calculate it that way, but you're not going to have, I mean, I would do it a little bit differently.
Well, right? How would you do it? This is all about you.
Yeah,
how would you?
Yeah,
I'm just
yeah,
guessing.
No, I know. I mean, so you're let's say your average factor, let's say, is 1.30, right? Because we still kind of calculate an effect. Let's say your average factor is 1.30. So you take $100 million, you put out you're buying 130 worth of receivables, right?
Yep.
You're going to turn that money probably 1.5 to 2 times a year. So with 100 million, you're not going to buy 130. You're going to buy 200, maybe 260 million of receivables, because you're collecting money and putting it back out, right?
Yep.
And then you'll deduct your fees, your expenses, and your cost of capital.
And that leaves your net interest margin, right? Your NIM. Is there a NIM that you're optimizing for?
Approximately in a good year, maybe about 16 to 18% return.
And I just don't know anything else about like OnDeck and others. Is that more or less than what you know sort of these other companies in your space are doing?
You know, it's hard to say. Look, OnDeck has long, you know, lower rates that they're trying to do these deals at, and I mean they're great. We work with them in partnerships sometimes, but hard to say. I don't know. I spoke to someone there, and they said, look, our defaults are about 12%. You know, defaults is one thing, actual write-off is another. So it's hard to read.
Yeah.
Right?
How do you define a default? Is it like once a payment is 100 days past due, or how do you define
default?
Yeah,
once they've breached the agreement, basically they're not remitting any of the receivables that we purchased.
But is there a cure period? So after 30 days, if
they
don't
cure?
Yeah,
we work with, look, we try to, you know, we reach out to them. We try to get back on, you know, get them back on track, find out what's going on. We're very merchant friendly to try to resolve a problem, but they'll block your payments. So you can't debit your payments anymore from their account, right? They're not picking up the phone and they return.
Oh, so you're not sitting in the flow of funds. They've got to hit the ACH or the wire button every month to pay you.
No, we will debit their account. We have the permission to do that, but they could still block your access to do that.
Exactly. You like you use modern treasury or something to automatically ACH the account.
Yeah, automatically. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, when we reconcile, we send a notice. This is your reconciliation. We're going to debit $92 from your account tomorrow. Right. And then all of a sudden they block it. Right. Of course, you know, you reach out, you email, you call, and you try to, hey, what's going on? So obviously if they go dark and, you know, you're returning certain number of those are blocked, that's a breach. You know, we pursue legal. But a lot
how
of
do you
times,
collect? I mean, do you have a UCC filing? I mean, how do you collect?
We have a UCC filing on the receivables, and we'll file in courts or arbitration. And takes time, you know, yep. Takes time. But yep. Look, a lot of times the communication just works it out, right?
Yeah. Yep. This is the underside of lending, of this sort of world that nobody talks about. So I appreciate you being so open about talking about
it. Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, if somebody has a problem, you know, we try to work it out. We get on the phone. Hey, we try at least. I mean, if they're talking to us, we're going to work it out. If they're not talking, they went dark. And certainly if people who go out of business, they tell you, hey, I'm closing down my business. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And you just want some verification that they're closing down, and you write it off. That's the risk you take.
Yeah, is that your target this year? By the way, you used the hundred million number earlier. I mean, would you consider 2024 a great year for you guys if you put out 100 million?
I think it'd be below my expectations.
What's your goal? What's your expectation?
A 300.
300. Okay. And what do you have to do between sort of now and December to get there? Any major changes or updates?
No. I mean, we've created, I hate using the word AI right now, because I don't know if there really is such a thing in our industry. It's really, I guess, teaching the computers to do what we do manually for many, many years, right? Mm-hmm. There was a good line I heard yesterday. You know, in fintech, you're either finance or you're technology. We're primary finance, right? Technology second, right? You know, we have to, you know, create returns and protect money, right? So what I think is going to make a difference is our automation that we've built out and our processes. So we can go from processing 5,000 or 7,000 applications a month to 50 or 100,000, because it's going to be very automated and shoot these offers. So that the cost of labor goes down, the cost of processing goes down.
What's your full-time team today? How many people?
I'd say about 90.
And how many are engineers?
We have 5 engineers.
Okay. I mean, some people might go, well, there's not a lot of engineering. Is it really automated?
Oh, it just does. And I'm deep involved. I'm like a CEO who's first a techie, who's sitting there and writing code and working.
You write code still?
Oh my God, it never ends. You know, it never ends. Because, you know, because programmers, they work on like, I love my guys, but there's no urgency with that, right?
You got to create the urgency.
Yeah, I have to create. And because I know what I'm doing, and I've built our platform, architected everything, I know it needs to be done quickly, but I also understand what, you know, the investors look for as far as their data, my employees, what they need to see. So I'm able to bridge all that together very, very quickly, as opposed to explaining to a developer who's going to sit there and write this out for 30 days. I mean, we launch stuff in days that I know, you know, other people take months.
Yeah. Right. So considering macroeconomics and all that this year, I mean, are you trying to target like 100% year-over-year growth rate, or 300%, or more conservative? Where's your head at?
We're trying to target way over 100% growth year. And we just got into the credit card processing world, because we see there's a lot of opportunities. So we like funding merchants that have credit card sales. The biggest one in the space, as you know, is Square and Shopify, right? They're putting out billions of dollars and they're collecting it via the credit card sales, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a great market there, but there's a lot of underserved merchants there. So for example, with Shopify, unless they invite you to take money, you can't get a Shopify loan if you're sitting on their platform, right?
Yep.
And they cap you out. So we've had a lot of Shopify merchants turn to us and say, hey, Shopify only gave me this, but I need this. And these are good businesses. They've got really, really good track records or data that you could look at where you can project the future better, right? Mm-hmm. So we got into that space, and we're actively marketing. And
who'd you use as your middleware, and who's the sponsor bank?
So we partnered with the one I'm going to mention is Solero. They're a fantastic outfit out of Nashville. We partnered with them. And then we have a couple of other partners that we've gotten incredible deals with. And usually it either goes through, you know, First Data, Fiserv, or TSYS, which is the process. Yeah.
Yep. And as we wrap up, again, you mentioned trying to do 300 million this year. And then you said you want to be way over 100% year-over-year growth, which would mean we could sort of back into volume this past year of, you know, caught 150 million bucks at a 16% NIM, which you articulated earlier. That would mean you did about 24 million bucks this past year with your team of 91. Am I in the right range?
I'm not going to confirm or deny. I can't do that. We don't publish numbers. And there's a reason why we do it. We try to... there's a lot going on with competitors in this world where
I was going to give you credit, because 24 million bucks of revenue with 90 people is very high revenue per employee for the space.
Well, we did, I think, we did about 70 million worth of revenue last year, give or take.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Just to be clear though, that's before you're paying your cost capital on the prom notes and all that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's still pretty good. So that would be, I mean, if you're taking 16%, I mean, you can back into something like 32, 33 million of revenue that you're keeping your take rate on that. Yeah. Pre losses. I mean, that's still very good in terms of revenue per employee with 90 people.
Yes. And that's because I sit here 7 days a week and I write this stuff and make sure it's working fast and quick and seamless. And that's a lot of, and again, I got to tell you, a lot of people, so you have your Shopify's, you have your Stripe, Squares, the big players, and they're very technology driven. And the rest of the industry is just not. They're really lagging behind. So that's that's, I think, where we stand out. You know, technology wise, I think we're really ahead of all of our mid-sized competitors in the space.
Yeah. How does a company like you get valued in the equity markets? Is it 1x, 70 million or 10x? Or how do you think about that?
Good question. I think it's going to be valued by who the buyer is. And I see people ask me that, what's the exit? There's really going to be only two buyers, right? There's either going to be a bank who's going to need, this full setup that can underwrite and fund deals, or it's going to be a hedge fund that's just got an enormous amount of money to put out and wants a vehicle to be able to do it through seamlessly.
Yeah. How do you drive your cost of capital down to increase your margin? I don't know what your prom notes are at, but I imagine it's probably 10.
It's actually not easy right now. You know, with the raise, the interest rates and everything going up, it got a little tighter and a little harder. So look, a lot of the funds are putting money out at, 13 to 15% a year in my space, which I think
is that where you're at right now, your cost of capital?
No, it's not.
You're under that.
12% or less.
Oh, that's great. So you don't think there's much room to push that lower though right now?
No, not right now. Not at all.
Yeah. Interesting. This is awesome. I love it. Engineering founder in the fintech space, still writing code, 90 people, a lot of revenue. Alex, we went way over time. I apologize. Let's wrap up here with the famous five. Number one, what's your favorite business book?
Oh, God. I can't even answer that. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Okay, we'll skip it. Number two, is there a CEO you're following in the space?
In the space, no. There's no CEO in the space that I resonate with with.
Number three, is there an online tool you're using that you used to build a business?
Look, we're doing a lot of ChatGTP stuff. There's nothing. Okay. Again, we do a lot of our on traditional basic stuff that everybody does, right? But yep. ChatGTP is playing a big role in many aspects these days.
Number four, how many hours of sleep do you get every night?
A good night is 4.5-5 hours. That's a good night.
Oh, wow. Okay. What's your situation? Married, single kids?
Married, two adult kids, grown-ups, two French bulldogs, which come to work every single day. That's important. Very family.
Are they in your office right now? Can you point your camera down? Are they at your feet?
I can bring them in if you give me 30 seconds.
Okay. Grab one. Why not? Look, we'll look at this view that my audience will look at this view while we wait. Alex is based in, I believe, New York. Maybe it looks more like Miami, actually. There we go. Look at the Bulldogs.
Lex and Lucky. There they are.
That's awesome. Lex and Lucky. All right. So two Bulldogs, married, two kids. And Alex, how old are you?
I'm 55.
Last question. Something you wish you knew when you were 20.
Oh, studied code back then. I started to study code way older in life. Should have read code when I was 20, but we only had like Commodores and Atari. So,
guys, FunKite was launched back in 2015 on a dream and an idea. They've scaled nicely today in a capital efficient way. They put out or they generated, they get 5,000 applications per month. They sent out offers about 1,300 of those. Some portion of those are accepted and approved. The business in 2023 did quote about $70 million of revenue. Alex is constantly thinking about how do they keep their both default rate low, which is 16%, if I'm remembering properly, and then the actual charge off loss rate, 6.8% of that. Those are good economics. They optimize for about a 16%. Take rate NIM sort of all in, which is very healthy. 91 folks full time on the team. They're funding these deals with prom notes on their own balance sheet and then also sourcing some of them out to capital partners as well. Check them out at funkite.com. Alex, thanks for taking us to the top.
Thank you.